You know what? That's a sound we're hearing more and more of here in the state. The Sandhill Crane, the recovery of the Sandhill Cranes, I think has been an amazing success story in species recovery. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're going to be talking about sandhills and other cranes as well with our two guests from the International Crane Foundation. Back with us once again, Ann Lacey. She is the Crane Research Coordinator. Ann, good to see you again.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also with us, Sarah Gavney Moore, who is the Digital Communications Specialist for the International Crane Foundation. Sarah, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So, as you listen to these two talk about cranes, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about sandhill behavior, for example? Maybe you have some questions about the International Crane Foundation, or just maybe about how cranes live and work. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And Sarah, let me start with you. What's your role with the International Crane Foundation?
Yes, I manage all of our digital resources. So I manage our website and also our social media. And I'm the person that clicks send on some of our emails as well.
Oh, there you go. I was just on your website maybe an hour or two ago, and it was, gosh, it really looks wonderful.
Thank you.
So you're doing a good job there, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's turn to Ann then. Ann, what about you? Talk
good morning.
About your role.
Oh, gosh. Well, I started at the International Crane Foundation working on sandhills. So sandhills, of the 15 species of cranes in the world, sandhills are near and dear to my heart. But more recently, working on the whooping crane reintroduction here in Wisconsin.
Well, it's all pretty cool hoopers, and they're coming back a little bit, aren't they?
They are. They're doing really well. Some of the population markers that we look for overall. So it's not just whooping cranes in Wisconsin. The original population flying between Texas wintering grounds and Canadian breeding grounds is up over 500, and so it doesn't seem like a lot of birds, but for us, that is a huge number. That's halfway to down listing.
Yeah, that's an amazing growth from where we
from
at one
15.
Point, there were 15. That
in
was it.
In the world. Yeah.
Whoa.
That's a shallow gene pool, and we're doing pretty good.
That's wonderful. Well, what role has the foundation played in the recovery of cranes? Let's talk about sandhills.
Sandhills. Well, you know, sandhills, they did it on their own, but they did have a lot of help from people in general. So at about the time that Aldo Leopold was doing a survey of sandhill cranes in Wisconsin, 30s, 40s, he estimated that there was about 25 pair in the state, which is also not very good. He thought that he was going to see them extirpated from Wisconsin in his lifetime, and thus the Marshland Elegy was written about that, and it's a beautiful, beautiful essay, and thankfully it did not come to fruition.
Yeah.
At the same time that was happening, we had wetlands protections, we had cessation of market hunting, and the sandhills responded to westward expansion and increased agriculture in Wisconsin, and slowly but surely they expanded, and now they're definitely back into their original range and expanding further east into even into New England and up into Quebec. So they're doing really good.
And here in Wisconsin, how many counties are they found in?
How many counties are there in Wisconsin there?
72.
72. They're found in 72 counties.
I've seen them in many of those counties. And, you know, this may be a little bit negative in a way, but I never in my life expected I would see a wild turkey or a sandhill crane hit by a car. And I have observed it in both wild turkeys and in sandhill cranes.
And there's a reflection of both their population density and how well that they have recovered, but also the density of roads and cars.
Yeah. Well, what makes cranes different from other birds?
They can look you in the eye. which is what I really like. But their behaviors, there is something, I mean, it's, we joke about it all the time, but people, it's easy to anthropomorphize cranes.
Yeah.
They have those human qualities. They stand on two legs. They talk to each other. They're long-lived, and they have this family structure that is so great. And so that they have something about cranes that people appreciate.
There is. And you know, when I visited the foundation, I visited quite a few times, when you go to the area where the cranes are, and a particular crane might be all the way back close to the shelter. But if you stand and stop, they'll walk right up and look you right in the eye.
Yeah, and wait for you to open up the bird feeder and say, hey, it's dinner time. They recognize people. And they have their people, just like people have their cranes. They're territorial. The same pair may come back to the exact same spot year after year to raise their young. And so they recognize their people. And if somebody new comes into the yard, they'll retreat and they'll take off. So they know who to trust and who not to trust quite yet.
Well, we have some callers online. You can join in, by the way, with your questions or comments about cranes and the International Crane Foundation. Join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Janet in Richland Center. Janet, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I'm wondering if you're open for visitors this spring and summer, or if you're still under construction.
Sarah, why don't you take that question?
Hi, Janet. Thanks so much for calling in with that question. We are closed through our 2019 visitor season. As you know, we're going through a multi-million dollar renovation of our visitors area. And unfortunately, that means there's not a lot of room for visitors. We joke that we have a 16th species of crane at our center right now.
Yeah.
We have our construction cranes on site. But we are planning on having a grand reopening in the spring of 2020.
So tell us about this this whole renovation. I was online looking at the website, and oh my goodness me, there's a lot going on there.
It is. It's the largest renovation we've had since we moved to this facility in the 1980s. And we are renovating 10 of our crane exhibits, along with building a new visitor center. The crane exhibits, many of them will have beautiful murals that depict the natural habitat where the cranes live. We also are having wetlands in all the exhibits. So you'll get much more of that immersive feeling like you have when you walk into the whooping crane exhibit that's currently at our site.
Will the sort of administrative center and the gift shop and that sort of, are they being renovated as well?
Yes, our administrative offices will remain the same, but the visitor center where you would normally walk in that has that barn-like structure, that building will remain, but the new visitor center will house like the welcome center where you go into when you arrive at the site, and also the new gift shop, and improved gift shop.
Well, it's pretty cool. I've spent a couple of bucks in that gift shop.
Yes.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, we do.
But don't despair, crane lovers worldwide. Craneshop.org is open for business.
Oh.
So nice plug.
Everything is absolutely available online.
Always some wonderful prints there. A really beautiful prints for sure. Well, we've got Scott in Appleton up with a question, so let's go there. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. At some time, I had heard that there might be pending action as far as opening up sandhill cranes for hunting. I wonder if you could speak to that, and I'll take my answer off air.
Sure.
I sure can. I think what you're probably referring to is periodically the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, a citizen-based advisory entity to the Natural Resources, the Wisconsin DNR, has a meeting every spring. And periodically the issue comes up, would the citizens of Wisconsin like to hunt sandhill cranes? And over the years, it still needs to go through a legislative process to actually have a hunting season. But in the past, 1999, 2000, there was an overwhelming yes, we would like to have a hunting season. Over the no's, we would not. But the last one was, I believe, 2 years ago. And the people that voted in the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, it was almost even we'd really rather not have one to have one. So it's never actually gotten further than that, suggestion from the Conservation Congress. But there are plenty of other states in the U.S. and other populations also that do have a hunting season for sandhill cranes.
Yeah, there are some of the western states,
correct,
right?
Yep, Central Flyway and in the west.
And so there you go. Let's go to Robert in Plover. Your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I got a question in regards. I do a lot of birding, trying to just observe through my binoculars and not really disturbing the birds in the process. And I've come across a sandhill crane in the Buena Vista grasslands area that is nesting. And I'm kind of curious as far as how long does the nesting process take before, their clutch starts to hatch?
Sure. The cranes come back from their winter migration. They're not gone for very long. And it might be a real estate issue. Those cranes come back to stake their territory. And this year, they probably had to wait a little while for snow to melt and the ice to go off those nesting wetlands. But once they build that nest and lay two eggs, is the typical clutch, they will incubate for 30 days. So from the initiation, the eggs are laid about 24 hours apart. And 30 days later, they will hatch 24 hours apart.
So there you go. We can talk some more about the whole life cycle, I guess you could say, of sandhill cranes. But we can't do it right this minute because we need to take a quick look at the news and the weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Our guest today from the International Crane Foundation, Ann Lacey, Crane Research Coordinator, Sarah Gavney Moore, who's the Digital Communications Specialist. They'll be with us right up till 12:30. Certainly, if you want to join in, give us a call now. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Back after the news. Well, those weren't sandhill cranes, were they? They were not sandhill cranes. Those are whooping cranes. Stella had called in to ask us to play the call of a whooping crane. She'd never heard one. And so we played it. Run that again, Dave. Play that once more so just so we can hear those hoopers. Yeah, there we go. So that's what they sound like.
That is a pair of whooping cranes doing a unison call. So many people are familiar with the sandhill crane unison call. Get used to that sound. Hopefully we'll hear it more and more in Wisconsin.
Well, let's go back to the sandhills for a bit because, Robert had some questions about nesting cranes. And actually, Marilyn from south of Boyd has some questions perhaps about nests. Let's go there. Marilyn, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call today.
Sure.
We live on 40 acres south of Boyd, and we've lived here about 4 years. We have a pond in front of our house and a creek to the west of us, and that creek flows through our land. So every year since we've been here, we have seen sandhill cranes. They walk through our yard, which has a field around it. They use our pond, and then they nest on the little creek. Now, my question is, I can see them nesting. We hear them a lot, but I never see the babies.
Ah.
They are sneaky, and it's their business to make sure that those chicks, it takes 7 to 8 weeks for them to get big enough where they can start practicing flying, and 9 to 10 weeks to be very strong flyers. So it's a long time to protect those little guys while they're on the ground. And so I would guess that they're probably going the opposite direction of the house and maybe going towards an agricultural field where there is, or a pasture where there's lots and lots of protein-based foods to give those chicks so they grow. They grow like weeds.
So does the, so let's continue talking about just sort of the life cycle as long as we're on this. And again, thanks, Marilyn, for that comment. But so they are 30 days out after the egg is laid, the chicks are born. Is that about right?
Yep.
And then for another 7 or 8 weeks, they kind of stay hidden?
Yeah. I mean, not hidden, or in the wide open. So they can see where a predator, air or ground, maybe can come towards them. But much like they are required to nest in a wetland, they're obligate wetland nesters. They will nest in water. They also roost in water, and that brings them a measure of safety. So they, 12 to 18 inches of water, they will roost in, and maybe the chick is on top of the old nest mound or other vegetation until it's tall enough. And so they can hear stuff coming. A lot of things won't go through the water to get to them, and that's how they remain safe until that chick can fly. Goes back into a nice hillside where they can catch the wind and they practice flying. And at that point, then they can go even further until they migrate. Yeah, and that's almost until in this this day and age. It's late November, early December. They're still here in Wisconsin.
Now, do they fly with mom and dad or do they go off on their own?
I would say typically they stay together as a family unit. But we have a long-term study site associated with the Crane Foundation where we have marked a population of birds in one spot. So we know a lot about their life, their ecology, and what do they do and whom they do it with. And so we really can tell that they more often than not will stay together as a family unit. But when they do separate, there's other sandhill cranes that they can join up with if they get separated and learn that migration route and learn the safe spots along the stopovers along there and then come back and set up shop wherever they would like to go.
Well, we talked about the eggs, but we didn't talk about how they get to be eggs. And let's take it to that point because there's some kind of fancy dancing and so forth that goes on, right?
Cranes are famous for their dancing. You want to talk about dancing, Sarah?
Sure. Well, if you happen to see a crane dance, I think it's something that you'll definitely remember. It's a beautiful ballet of sorts where they jump and they can sometimes throw twigs or corn stalks or whatever materials near them. And it's a way that they can build their pair bond, just like how you and I may dance with our partner. It's a way that they can do that, too. It's also a way that they maybe just kind of have a little bit of fun, blow off a little bit of steam. But it definitely is something that you see pairs doing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And do you have a video of that on your site?
Oh, I'm sure we do, yeah. we have a YouTube channel that folks are welcome to check out. It's linked through our website at savingcranes.org. And I bet we have both whooping crane and sandhill crane footage.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. That is such a cool site. I really like that site. Terry in Roberts emailed that she came across a nesting pair of sandhills last spring. She was riding her mare over an abandoned pasture in St. Croix County, and the crane started coming at them by air, and she had to get out of there because her horse was quite scared. She said it was a fun experience for her, though.
I bet for her, but not so much. Maybe in hindsight, it's fun for her. I can imagine those cranes, again, they have a lot invested in those two eggs, and so they will protect those eggs. And a horse is something that's big that could be perceived as a predator, and I can imagine them coming right straight at them to try to drive them off. They will do that to coyote, to bobcat, to even raccoon or skunk that could take eggs. And so that is some serious defensive maneuvering on the part of those cranes. I would not want them coming at me.
No, thank you. Well, let's take another call. Gail in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you I was at the Legion Post in Fox Lake. They have a dance on Friday nights. and there was a man sitting across from me, and he was talking about hunting sandhill cranes sort of almost as a service to farmers, because he said they're such a nuisance, and he acted like he had special permission, and he was almost bragging. And I, you know, I didn't know it was illegal, and I just sat there and listened. But boy, if I ever see him again, I will certainly tell him it's illegal.
There's a couple of points of clarification there, and I'm just going to guess what he was talking about. So with the recovery of sandhill cranes, with abundance comes its own problems, and now they have adapted so well to our agricultural landscape that they do use them, and they can do damage to cornfields specifically, other crops to a lesser extent, but they can really, they dig up the germinating corn seed in the spring. There is a solution to that. The farmer can buy a chemical treatment. It's a plant-based chemical that tastes bad, and the farmers can treat the seed. Farmers will, farmers also will stay in the field. The cranes will stay in the field and eat other things, but not damage the corn. However, there is a program through the USDA, Wildlife Services, APHIS, that if there is no other solution that will work for farmers, they can get a depredation permit. And so the thing to really separate here is that is not hunting. These are not birds that are harvested for consumption at all. It is purely for crop damage purposes. So we don't want to put that in the same realm as hunting and harvesting a natural resource at all. So he was probably just using that word as a colloquialism, but he may have had a legal permit from the USDA to remove cranes from an agricultural field.
So there you go. So it can happen, probably has happened here.
It does indeed happen. I try to tell people to use Avapel because I know that's the name, the trade name of the chemical seed treatment. And it absolutely works to keep the cranes from damaging the corn. And we're working on it for the crops. Pardon?
You only have to eat one.
I've seen them spit it out. It is hilarious. And they it tastes bad, and then they go on to other things.
And Gail, thank you so much for joining. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments or maybe your experiences to share with cranes. I'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. The annual crane count was just last week, wasn't it, Sarah?
Yes, it was Saturday, April 13th, was the day of the count. The funny thing is we had a pretty bad snowstorm come through a few
of
days
course.
Before.
Yes, naturally.
Yes. So we actually had some of our counters in more of the northern counties and in Minnesota reschedule for just this past Saturday. So we had an unusual count in that we actually had two count days. And this was the 44th year of the annual Midwest Crane Count. It started in 1976 as a class project in Columbia County. And at that time, they estimated that there were about 800 sandhill cranes in the state. And now 44 years later, we can see sandhill cranes in all 72 counties. We estimate probably about, during the count, we estimate about 12,000. It's not the total number. But that's how many we'll typically count on a good year.
Wow. Yeah. And there's a couple of different flights, isn't there? I wonder if there's ever any there how the gene pool gets mixed around a bit.
Oh, you mean flyways?
Flyways,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, sure, sure. Absolutely. And research has been done both with that banded population, the small little breeding area that we have looked at the ecology of sandhills, but other research in the eastern United States. We know now that there is overlap in the breeding area of the eastern population, which we have here, and the mid-continent population, which goes through famously the Platte River in Nebraska.
Yeah.
So there's overlap in northwestern Minnesota of those two populations, but they also winter together in Louisiana. And so if you picture those kind of the edges of two hourglasses coming together in Louisiana, we know that there's probably mixing there as well.
And that Platte River, Tim Isley, a good friend of mine who comes on the show once in a while, he and his wife were, I think just this last year, went to the Platte River to see the sandhills.
Phenomenal.
Apparently,
spectacle of wildlife. Yeah.
absolutely breathtaking to see how many thousands,
hundreds of thousands,
hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of cranes, so it's
a bucket list item for people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And when's the best time to see?
Typically mid-March. I always aim for St. Patrick's Day. if you'd like to see whooping cranes, kind of nudge it more towards April, and you're more likely to see whooping cranes that are flying through. They tend to migrate a little bit later than the sandhills do.
Ah. Well, let's take another call. Terry from Dalton will go to you next. Hi, Terry.
Yes, hello. I just have a couple of comments. First one, we were at, my wife and I at Hork on Mars Easter morning, walked that boardwalk and saw two whooping cranes there, which was kind of thrilling.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And also, a year ago, I have a small orchard where I live. I was working in there in a spring morning, and I saw something out of the corner of my eye, and here's a sandhill crane was just about going to land on my head, and it saw me and landed like 20 feet away, and there was an eagle right behind them. The eagle chased it all the way to the ground, and when the eagle saw me, they both flew away. So,
thank you for breaking up that fight. I don't think it would have ended well for either of them. I think,
no,
you know,
I don't think so.
Yeah, that there's another conservation success story, bald eagle, absolutely. And to say that Wisconsin has a robust population of eagles, and so there might be a little competition for space there, too. And when you have two territorial species coming together, that's probably what was happening there. But also, it's so wonderful that you saw those whooping cranes at Horicon. I know exactly who you're talking about. I just saw them last week as well. And that is a young pair that we are hoping will use that as their territory and maybe not nest this year because she's only two, the female. But we hope that she sets up a territory and nests next year.
Well, that's a great place. Terry, thanks again for calling in that marsh. That's a great place to walk at all times of the year.
Absolutely.
Thank you again. Lonnie in Lake Mills, let's go to you. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a whooping crane comment as well. I live outside of Lake Mills and was driving into Madison this morning and saw four whooping cranes taking off out of a field and flying around.
Thought
it was exciting.
Ah, great.
It's the rarest crane species in the world, and people can see them in a farm field in Wisconsin on their way to work. I think that is phenomenal. Thank you.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I will use that opportunity to remind people that if you ever see a whooping crane, please never assume that we know that it's there. We would love to hear about all the observations that people have. And so on our savingcranes.org or the partnership, Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership, the people that are bringing these whooping cranes back, there are places where you can record that observation for us, and it goes into our database. And we really appreciate those observations.
Lonnie, thank you so much. Let's go to Colleen from St. Croix Falls next. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share with you a story of when I was at Ottawa Lake. There's a almost domesticated pair of sandhill cranes down there that would walk on the beach among people, among the kids who were making sandcastles, and the people didn't bother the crane. The crane didn't bother the people. And quite interesting a few years ago. And I was sitting on a bank by the beach, probably 50 feet from the cranes, under a tree. And the baby crane, probably half the size of the parents, seemed to get tired and walked across the beach and sat down about 3 feet from me on the bank. I was very surprised.
Oh.
And I immediately looked at the parents to see, oh no, what are they going to do? Because they look kind of dangerous. And they looked up and they looked at the baby and they looked at me a couple of times. And then they went back to eating. They were getting little snails out of the beach.
Well,
and I look over at the baby and the baby started nodding and then finally fell asleep, sitting right next to me.
They trusted you.
Colleen, they took one look at you and said, "Now there's a trustworthy person.
Watch my baby while I go swimming." I have heard variations of that theme. I will caution people to never assume that trust is there, especially when there is a young involved in the picture. It might not take but a sideways glance that those cranes would defend that chick. And you are correct. They have very scary parts. They have sharp, pokey bits at both ends. And so I always recommend, no matter how friendly they seem, always keep a very respectful distance from any wildlife.
Thanks again, Colleen. Jim from Clintonville, it's your turn next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I it's a perfect time to follow up on that story. We have 80 acres in the country, of which most of it is grazed, intensively grazed, and we turn some of it into prairie. But we've had cranes raised there every year for as many years as I can remember. A few years ago, my four-year-old grandson and I were out going to the pasture in the golf cart, and we found one of the young cranes learning to fly had gotten caught in the woven wire fence. And so we drove over toward the crane. Of course, the parents are having a conniption fit, and I'm worried for the safety of my four-year-old grandson. Got him to stay in the golf cart. I went and extracted the crane carefully from the fence. And as soon as I let the chick go, it immediately ran up and attacked my four-year-old. It pecked through his bicep and caused blood. And
that's ungratefulness defined.
He's open mouth and he's going to start to cry. And I said, you know how many people have that badge of a crane pecking them like that? And he became very proud. And the parents were putting up a conniption fit. I was worried about them. I never thought about the chick. It knows how to defend itself.
Yeah, that is a perfect story to illustrate how tough sandhills are. And you're thinking, oh, this poor creature. And then it turns around and whacks you. But you did the right thing of trying to release it, you know, towards its parents. In our research, the same thing happens. Often they'll turn around and come back at us, which I don't blame them for. But I'm glad that things turned out okay, that it was only an arm, that he's proud of that scar. I have many myself. So
there you go.
That's great.
Thanks a lot, Jim, for that story. Sarah, back to you. You have, although you're not open, going to be open this year at the International Crane Foundation, you do have some other events or activities. Talk about those for a minute.
We do. There are two events that visitors have an opportunity of coming onto our site during 2019. The first is an evening with the construction cranes on June 15th. And that is, if any of our listeners have been to Evening of the Cranes, it's a similar event. We'll actually be holding it in a slightly different location on our site. It's going to be in our courtyard, which is typically off exhibit. So it's a chance to see an area near our offices. And we're going to have wine and beer tastings, appetizers, some light music. It should be a very nice time. And in addition to that, we are having behind-the-scenes tours of our construction during an evening with the construction cranes. And we also have our annual member day in September, on September 21st. So that's an opportunity that we invite all members to our site, also for behind-the-scenes tours of our breeding facility and other areas as well.
So that's going to be a pretty cool. And if you go to the site, which is, again, what's your website?
It's savingcranes.org.
So if you go to savingcranes.org, you're going to learn about, you know, the whens and the where of those events, which sound like a lot of fun to me. And also how you can join, because you can join, I believe, right online.
If you go to our website, click on support, and underneath that, click on membership, and you may become a member. Mm-hmm. And you might be wondering, well, why should I become a member if our facility is closed? Well, we have a lot of other benefits. We are a member of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And as a member of that, we have reciprocity with other zoos throughout the United States.
So that's one advantage. Yep. And there are many more benefits as well. And here we are out of time. I wish we had more time to be with you, Ann and Sarah. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll do it again. Thank you so much. Ann Lacey, the Crane Research Coordinator. Sarah Gavney Moore, the digital communications specialist for the International Crane Foundation. Welcome back, and we'll do it all over again. Tomorrow, Jim Ward comes back to talk about what salt may have done to your car over the winter, among other things. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.